As some of you know, years ago I was in a terrible car accident. Thankfully, at the time I was driving an 86 Volvo that was built like a tank. I lost control, the car flipped and rolled four times over, finally coming to rest on its side, on the passenger side, with me still belted into the driver's seat, clinging to the steering wheel, hanging suspended sideways in the air. Everything around me was shattered and crumpled. The windshield, where the windshield had been, it was completely gone. And I was dazed and confused and thinking, with all of the wreckage around me, I too must be badly injured, but in so much shock that I couldn't perceive it. So I remember being more acutely alone and frightened in that moment than I think I've ever experienced in my life. But probably not 5 seconds passed before a stranger appeared where the windshield had been. He reached in to release my seatbelt. I said, "Wait, how do I look?" I didn't mean, is my hair messed up or my makeup smudged? I meant, do I still have two ears, two eyes, two arms? How do I look? He says, "You look okay." So he released my seatbelt, grabbed me by the arm, eased me down, and walked me through the windshield about 40 feet away from the car, made me sit down and hold still until the paramedics arrived. When the paramedics arrived, in the commotion that followed, the stranger disappeared. I never had a chance to say thank you for being there in one of the most frightening moments of my life. Other cars had passed right by, but one stranger took the chance of rushing up to my vehicle, not knowing what he was going to encounter inside. I could have been a bloody mess. I could have been decapitated, and he would have had to live with that image for the rest of his life. He took the chance to help a stranger in time of need. I will be forever grateful for what that stranger did. There are some beautiful people in this world. Of course, there are also some really bad people in this world. Shane Claiborne tells a story about a night he was out on the streets of Philadelphia ministering to the homeless with a group of folks when they came across a homeless woman, a blind street musician, who'd been attacked by a group of punks who pulled a prank, were taunting her, and then sprayed her eyes with Lysol. As they were ministering to her, administering first aid and trying to comfort her, one of them said to her, "There sure are a lot of bad people in this world." She said, "Yes, there are. But there are a lot of good ones too. And the bad ones just make you good ones seem all the sweeter." I don't know about you, but when I see something beautiful like that, I say to myself, I want to be like that. I want to be one of the good ones. Today, that's what we're going to talk about. How can I be one of them? Let's start with a prayer. God, in a world that is frightened and hurting, we want to be instruments of your grace. Where there is hatred, let us be your love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, let us be your light. Remind us how we can be that kind of person. We ask in the name of Jesus. Amen. There is a calling on your life. God is calling you to be a certain way in this world, and me too. In our gospel passage today, Jesus describes what that calling looks like. Matthew chapter 5, verse 13, Jesus said, "You are the salt of the earth. You are meant to be the salt of the earth. But what good is salt if it's lost its flavor? Can you make it salty again? Instead, it'll just be thrown out and trampled underfoot as worthless." Verse 14, "You are the light of the world." You were meant to be the light of the world. No one lights a lamp, then puts it under a basket. Instead, a lamp is placed on a lampstand where it gives light to everyone in the house. So let's talk, let's think a little bit today about what it means to be salt and light. In the ancient world, a single bag of salt was considered to be as precious as a human life because salt was essential to the sustenance of life. So when Jesus says, "You are meant to be the salt of the earth," he means that you are vital to the survival of life the way it was meant to be on planet Earth. In ancient times, meat could be preserved from spoilage only by being cured with salt. Have you ever tasted authentic, old-fashioned, salt-cured ham? When you first bite into it, there is a jolt of flavor that stuns your taste buds, followed, at least in my experience, by a craving for more. There's just something about salted ham I can't get enough of. You and I were meant to be like that in this world. We were meant to be the kind of people that flavor a situation, that brings so much taste and beauty to a situation that people find themselves wanting more. We were meant to be the kind of people who flavor a situation in such a way that whereas it might have gone bad and spoiled, instead, it's transformed into something wonderful. You were meant to be the salt of the earth. In the ancient world, light was also a precious commodity. Old time rabbis back in olden times would often say, "God is the light of the world." But here, Jesus comes along now and says, "You are the light of the world." There's no contradiction there. What Jesus means is God's light is meant to shine through you so that, in Jesus' words, verse 16, others may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. The goal is that others see the light of God shining through us. Light is beautiful. Light is warm. Light is attractional. Given the way we're put together as human beings, we are drawn to light like a moth to a flame. It's like the old campfire song. It only takes a spark to get a fire going, and then all those around can warm up to its glowing. That's how it is with God's love. Once you've experienced it, you spread the love to everyone. You want to pass it on. You were meant to be like that. A light bearer for God who through your good works share the love of God, the kind of person whose presence so flavors a situation that otherwise might go bad and spoil, that it's transformed into something wonderful like Jesus before us. We are called to make a powerful, positive difference in this world. We are here not to be served, but to serve. Not so much to be blessed as to be a blessing. But it all begins with a choice. How do I choose to see myself? I guess what I'm trying to say is it all begins with a decision, a conscious decision I make about how I choose to see my life. One afternoon on a subway platform in Washington, D.C., a man who was waiting for the train to come into the station tripped, fell off the platform onto the tracks. Immediately, a group of people began to gather, reaching out to him from the platform, shouting at him, "Give me your hand! Give me your hand!" But the man was non-responsive. Then along came Mullah Nasruddin. He pushed his way through the group that was gathered there, knelt down at the edge of the platform, and said to the man on the tracks, "What do you do for a living?" The man said, I'm an IRS inspector. Mullah said to him, "In that case, take my hand." Immediately he reached up, took his hand, he pulled him to safety. Then Mullah turned around and said to the amazed group of people there, "You fools never ask a tax man to give you anything." Not give me your hand, take my hand. You've probably heard it said before that there are two kinds of people in the world, givers and takers. I think it would be more accurate to say there are two impulses deep within each of us. The impulse to give and the impulse to take. Which one of those impulses is going to predominate in your life? Which is going to have the upper hand? Which will you choose to be the primary lens through which you view your life? You're probably familiar with the famous statue of Jesus that towers over Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. It's called Christ the Redeemer. The statue is high on a cliff overlooking the city. Jesus' arms are outstretched like this and like this. I find that image of Jesus to be incredibly compelling. With his arms stretched out wide, it's as if he's ready to embrace the entire world. All of our pain, all of our joy, all of our suffering, all of our celebration. There's just something compelling about that. Recently, you may have seen the photographs. On some nights, they've been lighting up Christ the Redeemer with the flags of the nations of the world most affected by coronavirus. And then on other nights, the statue has been lit up with Jesus dressed in the garb of a medical worker. To me, that captures the essence of who Jesus is. I'm here to help. I'm here to bless. I'm here to heal, to be salt and light. But don't forget what Saint Teresa of Avila once famously said. She put it this way: Christ has no body now but yours. No hands, no feet on earth but yours. Yours are the eyes through which he looks compassion on this world. Yours are the feet with which he walks to do good. Yours are the hands through which he blesses all the world. Yours are the hands. Yours are the feet. Yours are the eyes. You are his body. Christ has no body now on earth but yours. We hear that, and it sounds nice, doesn't it? It almost sounds sentimental and sweet. But be careful what you ask for. As Craig Greenfield reminds us, we say we want to be the hands and feet of Jesus in this broken world, but we forget that his hands and feet were pierced by nails. In other words, it's not easy to be Jesus. It's wonderful. It's exciting. It's adventurous. But it also calls for a great deal of counterintuitive behavior and personal sacrifice. It calls for a complete paradigm shift from how much can I get to how much can I give. It's a missional view of life that requires a complete redefinition of how I see myself. One morning, a young mother was fixing breakfast for her two boys. She was fixing waffles. As her boys, Kevin, 5, and Ryan, 3, looked on, they got into an argument about who was going to get the first waffle. Seeing an opportunity for a spiritual lesson, Mom says to the two boys, "If Jesus were here, he would say, 'My brother can have the first waffle, I can wait.'" Kevin, 5 years old, thinks about this for a second, then says, "Ryan, you be Jesus." Go ahead, Ryan. Who wouldn't want to be Jesus, right? The truth is, it's not easy to be Jesus. There is a cost, a great reward, great joy, great adventure, great blessings, but also a cost to being Jesus in the world. As a result, there are a whole lot of people in this world who claim the name but don't walk in the way. Pastor Steve Shogren tells a story about a time he and his wife first moved into a new neighborhood, and before long they began to observe that there seemed to be quite a bit of tension between two of their neighbors. One of those neighbors was an outspoken churchgoer, and the other neighbor involved in this standoff was an agnostic. Steve says, "I was working out in the yard one day when the agnostic stopped by, started chatting me up, and said, 'Steve, you're a pastor, aren't you?' 'Yeah,' Steve said." He said, "I realized this is probably going to lead nowhere good, but yes," he said, "I'm a pastor." The agnostic neighbor proceeded to tell him the whole ugly history of the conflict between him and the outspoken church-going neighbor. Then he sighed deeply and said, "But Steve, what he just did a couple weeks ago takes the cake. Can you believe it? He had his lawyer send me a letter threatening a lawsuit if I didn't trim a tree on our property line. Steve, I would have been more than happy to trim the tree if he would just ask me to trim the tree. But now that he's threatened me with his lawyer in this lawsuit, I'm not going to trim the tree. I'm going to make him take me to court so I can tell all my friends the story of how Christians sued me over an orange tree." Steve says the agnostic neighbor sighed deeply and then said, "I guess sometimes Christians love us, they just don't like us." Talk about taking your light and putting it under a basket. Talk about salt that's lost its flavor. If salt loses its flavor, Jesus says, what good is it? There are a lot of people in this world who claim the name of Jesus but aren't living in the way of Jesus. There's nothing worse than somebody who claims to be one thing but lives another. Dennis Johnson says, needed to get his clothes dry cleaned, and he needed it done quickly. He was getting ready to go on a trip, and he had forgotten. He remembered that on the other side of town, he'd seen a dry cleaner whose name on the big sign above it was 1 hour dry cleaning. So he went to the trouble to drive all the way across town, took his clothes in, sat them on the counter, and then the clerk behind the counter says to him, "We can't get these back to you until Thursday." Steve said, "But I thought the sign outside said 1 hour dry cleaners." Without the slightest sense of irony, the clerk said, "Oh, that's just our name." It's easy to wear a "What Would Jesus Do" bracelet or a cross around our neck. What's more difficult? What's far more challenging is to live it, especially at home, where we let down our guard among those who are most familiar with us and are often at our worst. It's like that old saying that says, "The difficulty with marriage is you fall in love with the personality, but have to live with the character." Back in the 1970s, Arthur Burns was a famous economist and for 8 years served as chair of the Federal Reserve Board. Though he was Jewish, he was once invited to lead a prayer at a huge gathering for evangelical Christian politicians. The prayer that Arthur Burns prayed stunned his audience. This is exactly what he prayed. "Lord, I pray that Jews will come to know Jesus Christ. I pray that Buddhists will come to know Jesus Christ. I pray that Muslims will come to know Jesus Christ. And I also pray that Christians will come to know Jesus Christ. Amen." Enough said. That's convicting, isn't it? We aspire to good things, but it's hard to be salt and light. I want to be the kind of person whose light can light up a room with love. The kind of person who can light up a room with love that otherwise would have been filled with indifference. I want to be the kind of person that can flavor a situation that would otherwise spoil and go bad and transform it into something wonderful. But how and where will I ever find the strength to be that kind of person? Actually, that's where we're going to pick up next week. Next week, we're going to look at Jesus' secret formula for how we can live fully into our calling to be salt and light. But for today, we will have accomplished quite a lot if we simply remind ourselves that there is a calling on your life to be the salt of the earth, to be the light of the world, not just when it's easy, but especially when it's hard. Not just in the really big decisions of life where we have time to pray and meditate and think, but even and especially in all of those spontaneous little circumstances that arise at a moment's notice and populate our everyday life. Each one of us is called to be the hands and feet of Jesus. Let me close with a couple of examples of what that looks like. Being Jesus in the everyday flow of life. A couple months ago, I was standing at an ATM machine taking out some money when an elderly man walked up to me and said, "Could you please help me check my balance?" I said, "Okay." Gave him a little push, and he toppled right over. He had no balance at all. No, that wasn't one of the two stories I wanted to end with. Let me get back, refocus. Scott Sauls tells the story of a woman named Janet who visited his church for the first time one Sunday. She came in with her two young sons and checked them into the nursery, then went into the worship hall. After worship service, she came back out and was standing in line with her two boys to check them out of the nursery when one of the nursery volunteers walked up to her and had a quiet conversation explaining that they'd had some challenges with her boys that morning. They had picked some fights with other kids and broken some toys. That mother, in front of a group of people around her, proceeded to ream out those two little boys, getting so frustrated with them that she bellowed out S-H-I-T, then caught herself, felt embarrassed, grabbed her two boys and herded them out of the church. Everybody thought, they won't be coming back anytime soon. The next morning, one of the volunteer nursery workers who'd witnessed this event called the church office to ask if by any chance Janet had left any contact information. She had. So this nursery volunteer wrote a note and mailed it to Janet. This is what her note said. "Dear Janet, I'm so glad that you and your boys visited our church. Oh, and about that little exchange when you picked them up from the nursery, let's just say I found it so refreshing that you would feel freedom to speak with an honest vocabulary like that in church. I'm really drawn to honesty, and you're clearly an honest person. I hope we can become friends. Love." Then she signed her name. Actually, they did become friends. Janet did come back to church the next Sunday, and the next, and the next, and the next, and eventually became the director of the church's nursery, and ultimately got to know them well enough that she told them that when she first started attending church there, she had just begun the process of recovery from a heroin addiction. Do you see what happened in that situation? If I had been one of those nursery volunteers, it would have come so natural to me to watch what happened and then think to myself and then tell my best friends, "You would not believe what I saw in church on Sunday. This first-time visitor came into our church, shouted out an inappropriate word, and showing no respect for the culture we're trying to build in our church. Who does she think she is? She's not respecting who we are." You see, in that reaction, it's all about me. It's all about us. Instead, that nursery volunteer, having the empathy of Jesus, Christ the Redeemer, must have thought to herself, for someone to shout out S-H-I-T in the middle of church, how much stress and frustration must she be carrying? I wonder how we can help her. That's beautiful. You are meant to be the salt of the earth. You are meant to be the light of the world. I want to be more like that. I want to live more fully into my calling. Last story. Remember earlier I mentioned that the hardest place for most of us to be Jesus is in our own households, among those who know us best. I'm struck that in our gospel passage, in verse 15, Jesus said, "A lamp is placed on a lampstand where it gives light to everyone in the house." Notice that last phrase, "in the house." It is especially important that we be Jesus in our own household and among our own family. Last story, Shay Savano exited the highway near his home one day when his car sputtered to a stop. He rolled off the side of the road, tried to restart it, wouldn't restart, so he called a tow truck. The tow truck came, put his vehicle up on the truck, drove it to his house, deposited it in his driveway, where Shay opened the hood, started tinkering with some wires and some hose, but quickly expended his not-so-vast auto repair knowledge. So he went inside and called his dad, explained what had happened. His dad said, "After work tomorrow, I'm going to come down there." "No, no, no," Shay says, because his dad lived 215 miles away. "Yes," his dad says, "that's what I'm going to do." So the next day, after a 10-hour shift as a bus driver, his dad drove the 3 hours to Shay's house, pulls into the driveway, gives his son a hug. They have a conversation, and then dad gets his toolbox, lifts the hood, takes a look for about 15 seconds, closes the hood, starts to put his tools back. "What's wrong?" Shay said. "Didn't you bring the right tools?" "No," his dad said. "What's wrong then?" Shay said. "Shay," his dad said, "you ran out of gas." Can you imagine Shay's embarrassment? His dad is going to drive 430 miles round trip because he didn't think to check the gas gauge. "But here's the thing," Shay says. There were no words of recrimination. Dad said, "Let's go to dinner." They went to dinner. During the entire dinner, Shay says, there was no frustration. There were no words of incrimination. In fact, Shay says, it's been 9 months now, and never once since has Dad ever reminded me of that, of my stupidity and that embarrassing episode. That's grace. That's beautiful. That's what it looks like to be salt and light in this world. You and I are called to be that. You are meant to be the salt of the earth. You are meant to be the light of the world. What will happen to this world if the salt loses its flavor? What will happen to this world if the lights go out? There is a calling on your life. Have you embraced that call? It all begins with a decision. How will I choose to see myself? A giver or a taker? Someone who's here to serve or to be served? The world needs to see Jesus, Christ the Redeemer, in you. Will they? Have you decided to follow Jesus? Many of us have. But today we needed to be reminded of what that means. And some of us may be feeling the need and the urge to recommit ourselves to what it means to be a follower of Jesus. If that's you, you can express that desire of your heart to recommit your life to Christ by releasing a heart on the screen wherever you're watching right now. Some of us have maybe never made the decision, an intentional, conscious decision, to be a follower of Jesus, but maybe you're ready, oh, so ready. If that's your heart today, if that's where you are, you can simply pray, "Jesus, come into my heart. I want your light to shine through me. If you wish, you can symbolize that decision by releasing a heart on the screen where you're watching. You're also welcome to go to the response link in the web feed comment section today, and there on the response form, you'll find an option that says, I'm deciding to follow Jesus or to recommit myself to following Jesus. If you fill out that response form, one of our pastors will phone you this week and chat with you about where you are in your spiritual journey and what might be the next steps. If that would be helpful to you, don't be bashful. We're here to help. Because living into your calling, the reason for which you've been put here, it all begins with a decision. Jesus, come into my heart. I want your light to shine through me, in my home, and throughout the world. May people see Christ in me.